Welcome to the Sarah Explains It All podcast. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm Sarah, and if you don't know, I am a menstrual cycle coach who teaches women and women business owners how to harness the power of their natural energy cycles to avoid overwhelm and burnout and create more success in their lives and businesses. Thank you for joining me on this episode of Sarah Explains It All. I have got Marcel Rose with me this evening, because we are recording in the evening. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Very well.
Fantastic. So Marcel, why don't you give us a bit of background, your introduction, your bio, who you are, what you do, all that great stuff.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. So I specialize in helping women to beat binge eating, bulimia, and yo-yo dieting and emotional eating to really help them heal their relationship with food and their body. I'm a registered nutritionist and health coach, and I have specialist training in eating disorders as well.
And again, I think that's, I mean, first of all, so needed, because women have such, we have such complex relationships when it comes to foods and ways to eat and weight and all of that kind of stuff. So what really got you into this? What sort of spurred this interest in nutrition and health coaching and all of the like?
Yeah, well, I started off really having my own sort of digestive problems actually years ago. I was in the fashion industry many years ago as a buyer, and it was very stressful. A lot of long hours, a lot of traveling, not very sort of healthful behaviors, and not much sleep, and not really looking after myself. And I, ended up having IBS and gut problems. And then I got really interested in learning how to, after getting help actually myself, I got very interested in learning how to, what the power of nutrition and what you could do with it. So I then retrained as a nutritionist, advanced nutritionist, and then I subsequently did health coaching, because I really felt that actually there was a sort of bit missing. You knew all the information and everything, but it was how to get help people get from where they are to where they want to be. Yeah. But without just kind of overloading them with information, because the coaching, was such a key component. And I started getting a lot of people coming to me. I was primarily gut health, working in that area, but I got a lot of people starting to come to me around weight loss. I wasn't really interested in weight loss particularly, but then people would, I noticed that they needed a bit more, they didn't really need weight loss. It was all around their relationship with food. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I'm getting a lot of these particular types of people coming for help, and I need more tools in my toolbox. So that's when I did the training with the National Center for Eating Disorders, and it's very much eating psychology and behavior change and really understanding disordered eating and eating disorders. But the training has been so helpful, because even if I'm not working with someone with clinical eating disorder, there's a lot that you can do to really work on all the different aspects of, healing their relationship with food and their body.
Yeah. And I mean, there's such a connection between the gut and our menstrual cycle, because there's such a relationship with the gut and our digestive system with our entire body.
Yes.
So I'd really love to touch on disordered eating and what that is, but also what classes as normal eating, because I think a lot of times we don't really know the difference between the two. And whereas we might think we have disordered eating and actually we eat pretty normally, or we think we eat normally and actually we are like so far from that, it is crazy. Yeah. But we don't know, because we don't know what you don't know, right? If that's how you were raised and things like that. It's so could you, well, whichever one you want to start off with first, disordered, yeah, eating or normal eating, dive right in.
Well, how I like to look at it is that you've got one end of the sort of spectrum and call it normal eating. And at the other end, you've got clinical eating disorders. And then there's a whole lot of people in the middle that have different degrees of disordered eating. I would say a normal eater is really somebody who eats, doesn't really think about or worry about eating. They eat without feeling guilt or shame afterwards. They don't compensate. Mm-hmm. In terms of, you know, well, I've eaten a bar of chocolate, therefore I'm going to skip a meal or only eat a certain amount of calories afterwards, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I used to be one of those.
Okay. Mm. And it's so common, isn't it?
Mm.
Eating when you're hungry, not sort of, you know, just you get the hunger pains, you think, okay, I need to eat now. Or any signs of hunger, need to eat now. You know, usually stopping when you're full, but it's quite normal for some people to overeat at certain times. You know, you think about Christmas Day, and it's quite normal to people indulge, and that's fine. And then but the key is that they move on from it then. It doesn't become a guilt-ridden experience and result in other behaviours. So really it's just having kind of quite a rounded relationship with food. It doesn't take over their mind the whole time. So when you move into disordered eating territory, it becomes something that really takes over. So it becomes a 24/7, thinking about food or their weight or their body. Worrying about what they're going to eat next, worrying about what other people are thinking about what they're eating. And the guilt and the shame. Now, there's a lot of, as I said, a lot of different degrees of disordered eating. So you can be anywhere kind of along that spectrum. When you're talking about clinical eating disorders, there are very distinct criteria that you have to meet to be diagnosed with an eating disorder. And there's obviously a lot of stress with that, and it causes a lot of health problems and can be, you know, life-threatening in some cases. But it doesn't mean that if you're a disordered eater that you're not suffering with a lot of the same distress and a lot of the same physical, emotional, mental problems that someone with a clinical eating disorder has.
Yeah, and I think quite a lot of people would go, oh, I'm probably in the middle.
Mm.
You know, like listening to you talk, I've definitely been on that spectrum, as I'm sure quite a lot of people. So I feel like that normal that you just described is about 95% men.
Yeah,
and then I think women are sort of in the middle and to that disordered eating spectrum, yes. Right?
Yeah.
And so I guess, you know, it's to be aware of it, but also to not feel shame in it. I think there's so much shame mm-hmm. wrapped up in so much about women, like so much about mm-hmm. being a woman, whether it's your menstrual cycle or your mood swings or your eating habits. There's so much shame and lack mm-hmm. of language and lack of education around so much.
Yes.
Of being a woman, right?
Yeah.
So I love that I can actually pick from that description where I would fall in that. And I'd say I'd probably be a 6 or a 7.
Mm,
right. Yes. And I don't think I'm not saying that as shamed, like full of shame, because that is just where I am. Like I do have quite a lot of stress. I do think about food quite a lot because I'm trying to figure out who's going to eat what, because my husband eats differently to my daughter, who eats differently to me. And so there is a lot of stress wrapped in and wrapped up around food time,
yes.
I think.
Yeah.
So what are some tricks? Tricks, that's probably not the right word. I use it all the time, though. What are some tips or some techniques for people who recognize themselves along that spectrum, more towards the not so normal eating or the disordered eating versus the normal? How would you help support them in becoming more towards a 3 or a 4 on that
yes.
scale if one is normal eating?
Yeah, that's a great question. And can I just say that I know we mentioned around the men,
Oh yeah.
It is a growing area. I mean, I work with mainly women, but you know, sadly, men are also, you know, you're seeing a lot of eating disorders in men and boys now.
It's interesting that you say that. So I work in a primary school and I do the pack lunches. It's great. Yes. It means I get to be inside. But the children who throw food away, who don't want to eat the food, are not the girls. Mm. They are the boys.
Interesting. Yeah.
You know, and actually thinking that the girls might go, oh, I don't like this, but we can figure something out, whereas the boys just want to throw it away, like they're just chucking it in the bin, they'd rather just not eat it. Yeah. So yeah, now that you say that, it's kind of yeah.
Though, you know, obviously that working with a lot of people, a lot of women, there's very much the emotional eating comes into it.
And, oh yeah,
that's a big thing. But to answer your question, yes, what kind of tips and strategies? Well, when I work with someone, we really look at lots of, you know, it's not just one thing. So we will look at, depending what's going on, because most people think about, you know, disordered eating or eating disorders being more on the restricting and just not eating. Mm. There's obviously more kind of, there are lots of people with binge eating disorder, which is meant to be, it's probably an underestimation, but I think Beat was saying it's around, the eating disorder charity, it's around 1 in 50 people have binge eating disorder, but they're probably more because not everyone
reaches or seeks help.
And then if you're there's a lot of people that don't meet that criteria but do binge eat.
Yes.
So obviously there's also bulimia as well, so there's some people who might not be diagnosed with bulimia but binge eat and maybe purge sometimes, mm-hmm. but not meeting criteria, and there's obviously people who are more on the sort of just, you know, food restriction way, but also there's people who are quite orthorexic in their thinking, which is when they have a sort of a fear around foods that aren't considered healthy.
Yeah.
Everything's got to be completely perfectly healthy, and sort of it's like that clean eating thing. So obviously, depending on what's going on, there are some differences. But one of the things you always do is look at them from a physiological point of view. So looking at their diet and trying to help them to just get some balance in to regulate their blood sugar, because that you know, can just really help to take away. For example, if someone is binge eating or emotional eating, then by regulating their blood sugar, they're less likely to have the physiological cravings. Now, that's not the only reason for the cravings, but it's one thing that you can help with. And obviously trying to get more of the nutrients in so that they're feeling more balanced, they're feeling more emotionally balanced and mentally balanced, and as well as the physical side of things, feeling more energized and feeling better. Because obviously when they feel that, they're more likely to have the energy to sort of put in healthy behaviors and cook for themselves and prepare food and all of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But that's obviously just one part of it. So the other, in terms of other strategies, thought work and mindset work is so important. So it's starting to notice what your thoughts are. If you are having those critical inner thoughts, which I'm sure we all do, but some people, particularly, you know, disordered eaters will have these thoughts taking over their mind. It's exhausting for them. It's like literally morning, noon and night.
Gosh, yeah.
So it's starting to notice the thoughts, but without judging themselves on it. So it's starting to notice, I notice that I'm having a thought about my food now, right now. And it sounds like a very simple thing to do, but it's so difficult.
Yeah. When you're in the moment, it's really difficult. And, you know, it's noticing that thought and reframing it or challenging it.
Exactly.
You know, and that's not easy.
No,
really isn't.
But the first stage, I would say, is just noticing. And one of the best ways you can do that is literally do a download on paper and then write down the thoughts, because then you start to become aware of them. And then you can start to say to yourself, well, okay, if I'm having this thought regularly, and this is a regular thought pattern that's going on, what can I say to myself that will be more helpful?
Yes.
And then you can almost write down the answer that you're going to say to yourself. And it is about repetition, repetition, repetition. And then you start to grow those sort of, develop those new neural pathways so that it doesn't become the first automatic thing. Like, I've eaten a chocolate bar, therefore I feel guilty, therefore I'm a bad person because I've been bad. I've been a bad person. I'm bad. Therefore I feel terrible. Therefore I've blown it. Therefore I might as well just carry on. That's the sort of, you know, very common sort of thought process. So if you can catch yourself before that, that moment and notice it, it's like, oh, I'm noticing I'm having that thought again. And I wonder what has triggered that as well, because then you can start to understand, you know, what triggers those thoughts.
And those thoughts, you know, do you find that there is sort of like five that go over and over and over, so that it's not like 1,000 different negative thoughts? There are a few, and that they come from a place of shame or judgment or lack of self-worth. You know, I do wonder, because a lot of I'm talking about myself, like a lot of my automatic negative thoughts come from a lack of self-worth, like I don't deserve that kind of thing. So, and I mean, I say that because I'm still working on it, as we all do. It is always a work in progress. But I wonder if there is an umbrella like shame, and then these automatic negative thoughts are dropping from that umbrella, or do you find that it's normally a mixture?
Yeah, I think it does all stem from the shame, very much so. And the, you know, self-worth is so key, because actually when you can start to build self-worth, you know, the person becomes empowered. It's knowing that they can do things, knowing that they have that sort of self-efficacy, they can make change, because half the problem is they can't, you know, particularly in some instances, just can't believe they can make change. And, you know, they just feel like a failure all the time. And that comes from so many deep-rooted sort of beliefs that they have developed over the years, since childhood usually. And a lot of the work we do is like really understanding where the body image stuff came from as well, because it's so all interconnected. You can't just look at the food on its own. So you have to do the other work too.
So like, what is that underlying why? Where does it stem from? Where does it come from? I mean, and now we look at young girls. I mean, I have a 10-year-old, and I just think, oh my goodness, you know, the social media, the TikToks, the Facebooks, the Instagrams, the I don't even know what all, like that's Snapchat even still a thing. Like, there's so much going on. And children, I find, have little, like less resilience than we did. You know, growing up. And so you can imagine that this sort of disordered eating will become even more prevalent because of the social media that's shoved into their faces, the less resilience that they seem to be having. I mean, that's clearly not all children, but it's definitely, I mean, as I said, I work in emotional and well-being in a primary school, and it's definitely a topic of conversation amongst quite a few of the primary schools in our area. The coping mechanisms that children just seem to not be developing as much. Do you see a rise in younger children, or is it still more of a teenage thing that they are sort of now just discovering that they have that, like, age range?
The age range is going younger and younger, sadly. You see, you know, but it also stems right up to people in their, you know, I work with women in their 70s who their whole life have have struggled with their relationship with food. And I think, you know, the misconception regarding, particularly regarding eating disorders, is that, you know, it's just teenagers. And actually, it can be any age, any gender, any ethnicity, you know, it can be anyone. And often people get missed who are younger, you know, really young, or older, you know, adults get missed. And as I was saying, males often get missed because they're just, you know, they're just not looking out. And I think there's a lot that, I think it is difficult because of the social media has made it so much harder. But there's a lot that a pushback, but I don't think enough yet, from people, and I feel really passionately about it, and something that I'm just going to keep shouting about. But there are other people talking about diet culture and how it, you know, has impacted, sadly. You know, I know that the general, our older, you know, our parents, for example, our mothers, and how that's been sort of passed down to us. And I'm just hoping that the more people that talk about, you know, diet culture and how, and the impact that it's having, and actually that we need to sort of move away from that, that we can change the narrative around how children view their bodies and their worth based on their body size.
But it's just really important, I think, that there be that education, right? Like, I mean, before we chatted, or maybe we chatted on this call, I can't remember, with the intuitive eating, we will have a podcast coming out about that. And I quite like the structure of counting macros, because I know by doing that, I'm getting the right nutrients for my body. And I feel better if I do that. I can also see how that can go to the extreme, right? Yes. But again, it's about, for me, it's about having that education around what it is I'm choosing to do. And I think diet culture just preys upon quick weight loss, lose 20 pounds in a week, whatever ridiculous line they're selling. And there is no education behind it.
No.
You know, it is follow this program, do it blindly, and you'll see the results. Well, most people don't do it blindly, and they don't follow it exactly to a T. And they're not in a position, because they're already stressed about wanting to lose weight because they feel like they need to. So they're already in a little bit of a tenuous position, that these places, these diet cultures, are just preying on these people. And I'm really passionate, as I'm sure you are, on the education of nutrition. We just don't teach it at all in any way, shape, or form. And so I do wonder, in your opinion, if you think that narrative is changing along with the anti-diet culture, is the narrative of teaching more about nutrition coming, or are we still kind of slowly waiting?
I think there's definitely more, but probably not enough. But I mean, certainly I've done a little bit of a U-turn in my sort of career as a nutritionist, in that, yes, I think we should teach nutrition, but I think the way that we do it is important. So it's not good or bad foods. It's about balance, and you know, because I think we can really demonize, you know, we can go the wrong way and demonize certain foods, which gets into the
psyche.
Yeah.
But equally, it just needs to be simple. Like, you know, I think we can, and I use we as like the royal we, the general we can make it so difficult. Like, I don't need to know about, I mean, I can't even think, you know, like hydrogenated soluble fats or whatever. Like, what are they? The HSCL. I mean, I can't even think of what they're called, but they're in point. I don't need to know about that particular type of cholesterol, right? Mm-hmm. I need to know about carbohydrates and how they're important. I need to know about fats and how they're important. I need to know about protein and how it's important. I need to know about fiber and how that is so important for women.
Yes.
But they make it so all-encompassing that I think that makes it a challenge. I mean, I don't know what your opinion is on that. That's mine.
Well, I think it is so overwhelming. And a lot of the problem is because there's just stuff everywhere, isn't there? There's information yeah. everywhere, and people get so overwhelmed. And then a lot of people, you know, phone me up for help, seeking help, and just say, I just don't know what to eat anymore. You yeah. know, I really don't know what to eat anymore. I'm so overwhelmed. I'm so confused. Often they've followed a number of different diets, which has confused them. And, you know, it is about bringing the simplicity back into things.
Yeah.
And we've moved away from that. And the problem is we have completely disconnected also with our body in understanding what it needs, because the diets take us away from that. So if we are just told, you know, have a certain number of calories, you should have this number of calories to, you know, this is what you need to have. I mean, whoever decided on the number of calories has no idea about you as a person and what your body needs. You know, you are the one that knows what your body needs, really. And it's about reconnecting with that as well.
And so, I think, and that's a lot of work I do with women.
Yeah.
Is the remembering, right? We're all born knowing what our body needs, how it needs to be fueled, what it is trying to tell us. But society continuously, particularly women, I mean, I say that because I work with women because I work with menstruators. But they are constantly told to ignore their intuition, to ignore their gut feeling, to ignore what their body is saying, because it's not that bad and you just have to get on with it and that's your lot in life. And so then we spend so much of our lives second guessing. And I do feel that, you know, what your work you do is a lot of times teaching women or helping women to remember that they know best.
Yeah, absolutely. It's empowering them.
Yeah. So
that they know in the future, because whatever I always say, whatever happens in the future, there are going to be stressful times. Life has its ups and downs and bumps in the road. And I don't want to send you away with a meal plan so that you can follow, because that feels very much like a diet to me. And I'm the one telling you what you should be doing. What I want to do as part of, you know, my programs is really empower the women so that they know, they go away with all their strategies, all their tools, you know, loads of ideas for food if that's something they struggle with, obviously. And we talk through and I coach them through. But it's very much them being empowered with knowing. So if a stressful event happens in their life or time, they know what they need to do to work through that so that that doesn't impact their eating behavior and they don't have a relapse or, you know.
And it's about creating a toolbox, you know. Yes. And this is what I talk about with a lot of my women, and we talk about self-care, which is such a buzzword, but it is really important.
Yes.
And I think, you know, what you class as self-care is going to be very different to what I class as self-care, but what I need some days is not what I'm going to need on others. So yes. It's a beautiful idea of creating this toolbox of strategies and tips and go to things that maybe you do just need, you know, like sometimes if I'm super stressful or if it's super stressful or I'm really tired, like I'm fighting with this COVID stuff at the moment, I just need really healthy, easy to make meals. Yes. And maybe that's part of your toolbox, right? That doesn't have to be, you know, and I love it. Such a beautiful idea. And again, empowering.
Yes, exactly. And that's what we need to do. I think people have been taken away from that.
Yeah.
Because they're, you know, and yeah, the tools and the strategies are just, that's the key that's going to take them forward. And I do completely agree about self-care, and it, you know, it does sound like everyone's talking about self-care, but there are so many different meanings, and a lot of it is around this sort of whole self-compassion. And I think there is, you know, we know there's research that tells us that has a massive impact on how we look after ourselves and how we feel.
Completely.
Yeah. So this, and there's so many different ways that that can come in, and it's up to the, also that's where the coaching comes in, because it's finding out what that individual, what it looks like for them, because everyone's different.
Absolutely. And again, you can give ideas and strategies, but they may go, actually, none of those feel right. I'd rather, those crazy people that say, I'd rather go run 10 miles.
Yeah.
Definitely not in my toolbox. But hey, love, if it's in yours, crack on.
Exactly.
So yeah, I think it is, whilst it is battered around, it's like the word empowering is also battered around quite a lot. But do we feel like that because it's women saying it a lot of times? And again, society kind of tells us to just, it's fluff when a woman sort of says it. I mean, we could go into the patriarchy, but I won't, don't worry. It is International Women's Day as we record this. So I do feel like, you know, so I love that you talk about, because I thought when we first discussed this, that normal eating, you were going to tell me, like, I don't know what I thought, but when you started to talk about how they don't have guilt around food, they don't start to think, it just, it blew me away, because that isn't what I thought we would talk about as a normal eater. But I can see that so much in little children, you know, with the kids that I work with. And I can see as they get older and move up through the school, how it starts to change.
Yeah.
And I wonder if you've got any strategies for parents to help with their children when they start to notice that there's a lot more thought wrapped up in their eating than perhaps there was before.
Yes. Well, I think the best thing that parents can do is model behavior. And I know that I get this a lot because obviously it does pass down through generations. But so it's about, you know, showing eating with your kids, eating in a balanced way, having, you know, not skipping meals in front. You know, they pick up on so much, kids, don't they? And you think that they might not, but they see. So it's eating your three meals a day, eating in a balanced way, not demonizing food. Obviously, you want to teach them that some things and foods are more helpful, and these are the foods we're going to put in because these are going to help to strengthen your muscles so you can be really good at, you know, the sport that you enjoy at school, or your, you know, to help your brain develop so you've got a powerful, you know, powerful brain and really help with your schoolwork and your exams, depending on the age. Obviously, you know, you've got to sort of think about what they are really into and enjoy. And if they enjoy doing certain activities, you know, say they're into gymnastics, you can say, well, this is going to really, you know, this is really beneficial for your muscles. So it's around bringing stuff in rather than talking about taking things out. What can we bring in and getting them excited, you know, getting them interested in all different types of foods, getting them to join in with cooking and preparing foods and things like that, so that they're just used to trying different things. And they, but mostly it's them seeing the behavior of the parent, I suppose, and just, you know, seeing them eating in a normal kind of way.
Yeah, and in a healthy
way, and not commenting about their weight and their size in front of them, and that they're on the next diet, which, you know, so I think a lot of people don't realize that the kids really pick up on that.
I don't think they realize they're doing it half the time.
Yeah,
you know, I think we're so used to, or a lot of women I know are so used to just being self-deprecating because it's how we've managed to get through life.
Yes.
You know, and it, whilst it is really not healthy for us, it's equally as unhealthy to do it in front of your children, because they'll just think that that is normal.
Yes.
And it's not. But then equally, if that's how you grew up, it was normal. So it is changing that narrative for women to realize that that's not normal. You know, like, it's not normal to always have a stomach ache all the time, or it's not normal to have debilitating period pains during your menstrual cycle. You know, it's, but sometimes I think women don't realize it's not normal because they've never been told it's not normal, because we don't talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is why I like to talk about lots of taboo things.
Yeah, it's great.
So, thank you. This has been such an interesting, like, my mind is blown with any of these podcasts. I feel like I've come away learning so much. It's just been brilliant. Two more questions. One, where can everyone find you online? I will put it in the show notes, but I always like to ask before we dive into our last question.
Yeah, so you can find me on Instagram at Marcel Rose Nutrition. I'm on Facebook. I do have a Facebook group actually called the Food Freedom Collective, and I'll give you the link to that. But it's a free group which is very much around helping women to, you know, heal their relationship with food and their body.
Fantastic.
And I do have, I've got also a website, Marcel Rose Nutrition. So Facebook, same, LinkedIn, whatever, all of them, really.
Yeah.
I do also have a download that people can have. If you want to find out more about what the diet industry doesn't want you to know. And so this debunks all the sort of weight loss and dieting myths. And it's, you know, if you're someone who's like interested in the research as well, I've got, you know, the research is at the back if you want that, but generally it's an easy read. And I just really want to break down the myths because I feel that, you know, this diet culture taking over, and if we can just try and spread the word so that people can actually, that's a way that to empower them. So if, again, if they're having these thoughts around food and dieting and weight loss, at least they've got the information there that is, you know, correct, and it's weight science basically.
Absolutely. And I think it's so important to have those myths debunked, because they are myths for a reason, but the diet industry has so much money to back against throwing all this stuff out there, and lots of adverts and things like that we have to get it out any way we can. I will definitely be signing up for that ebook because it sounds amazing. Now, I always ask the last questions, always the same question, period positive or period neutral story. Please, do you have one to share with us?
Well, I do. It's probably a bit different to regular ones, but because I actually ended up having to have a hysterectomy, but when I was, I think I was 40, my ovaries remained. Mm-hmm. So I was still having cycles at that point. I mean, I'm kind of perimenopausal at the moment. But what I found really interesting was the fact that, you know how we've been talking about connecting with your body?
Yes.
That I thought, because not having periods after having the hysterectomy, you know, I would no longer know what's going on with my cycles. But I really learned to connect with that, mm-hmm. so that I now see all the signs, the other signs that my body gives me in terms of what's going on with my cycle, and I know when I'm having a cycle and when I'm not. So it's fascinating.
It is. And I don't think, because again, we're so busy all the time, we're not taught these signs to check in, to recognize, to be in tune with, that women don't get it. We don't understand what is going on. And I'm super passionate about changing that narrative and about helping women to understand what is going on and to be able, because how amazing is that when you can go, I know I'm about to ovulate.
Yeah.
You know, or I'm in my spring, I'm going to really like get down and dirty and start fleshing out some of these ideas or whatever it is. You know, I think, because again, there is that lack of education around it. We just don't know it. So I love that you have brought that up, because even though you have had a partial hysterectomy, you still have been able to connect in. And that in itself is amazing.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining me this evening. This has been, as I said, eye-opening and so educational. And I know everyone's going to love having a listen.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure.
See you soon.
See you.